You are listening to the Punk News Podcast on this Arctic Apocalypse night of February 12, 2014. Let's get ready to freeze. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. It is February 12th. Let me tell you, Valentine's Day is came and went by the time you heard this. Adam White, you're married. You got a kid. Is Valentine's Day still as magical as it used to be? Is it more magical, or is it now a burden because you have a child?
I came home today from the office fretting over like what my Valentine's Day plans were going to be. And it turns out my wife is working that day anyway. So not only is it a complete bust because you have a kid, but we're not even going to be in the same place. So that's, yeah.
You guys celebrate it in Canada?
Yeah, but we instead of having pilgrims, we just have turkey.
Adam, Adam, your wife's at work. Is going to be at work.
Yeah,
Adam.
So it's just
Adam,
me and the baby.
You owe me. So here's what you got to do, Adam. Show up at your wife's work with a box of chocolate and flowers. You will buy yourself a billion brownie points. Just do it. It'll take you a half hour. You will be the man, Adam. You'll be the man.
Hmm. Or I could watch the kid and drink beer.
You could do that too. Chris Barrett, you're married, but you have no kid. Chris, what are you doing for Valentine's Day? What are you doing with your sweetie pie?
Me and my sweetie pie are going to plan on surviving the snowpocalypse. Then after we survive the snowpocalypse, we plan on going to see Off With Their Heads and Menzingers down in Asbury. And then we have rented a room somewhere in Jersey. So a love shack.
Is it a suite or is it just your standard real? Is there a jacuzzi in it? That's the question.
Jacuzzi.
There is a jacuzzi.
There is a jacuzzi.
and we are also here with my main man, the guy making his triumphant return after a long await, Chris Moran. Chris Moran, you and I were both single on Valentine's Day. Chris, are you going to be out in the hunt on Valentine's Day, or what are you going to be doing?
No, I'll probably just be sitting at home on a Friday night and. I don't know. We'll see. I've got a few names in the black book.
What you should do is like people are always getting dumped on Valentine's Day because I saw that in like romantic comedies. And for some reason Valentine's Day makes people break up. So you ought to go for the rebound on Valentine's Day, Chris. I mean that's what you should do.
Yeah. Although I'm not gonna get too crazy because Saturday morning is the US Russia hockey game, so.
Oh, big time.
Oh, in the Olympics?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. And, of course, this is your Cupid, your manifestation of Cupid. This is Features Editor John Gentile. And before we get started tonight, I just got to real quickly talk about Black Flag. A lot of people have been asking me about Black Flag. I would have talked about it last week, but I wasn't on the podcast because last week's Snowpocalypse knocked out my power. Question is this. Is Black Flag Black Flag with Judge Greg Ginn and three lunkies? Short answer, no. Greg Ginn is a phenomenal guitar player. He's a genius. There's probably no other guitar player as good as he is. However, he is not a lone Black Flag. I mean, if you check out his solo records, they don't quite have the snap or the cleverness of the Black Flag records. Black Flag, elements of Black Flag are Keith Morris, Henry Rollins, Des Katina, and Chuck Tukowski. So I think it's pretty lame for Greg Ginn to be calling good for you Black Flag. That's my opinion on that.
Sad trombone.
Now we got a whole bunch of mail this week. Actually, we got a couple of letters. We're going to read one that refers to last week's or no 2 weeks ago's podcast, and then we're going to use the new one to segue into this week's podcast. So the first letter that we got referring to 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I talked about how I think Kendrick Lamar got robbed from the Grammys and that Macklemore should not have won. We got an email from Gabe. Here's what Gabe said. Hi, all. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for the podcast. It allows my three-hour round trip to a boring desk, albeit decent-paying job, seem less boring. You guys always make it easier to discover new bands as time becomes less and less. I want to touch upon something that John said in regards to Macklemore. While I love punk, hardcore, and what have you, I also have a love for hip-hop. I agree with John that... Is it Macklemore or Macklemore? I think it's Macklemore, right?
Macklemore.
Macklemore?
Yeah, I believe that. I believe so.
Okay, so it's like Mac L'Amour. So Mac as in English, and Il Amour in French, meaning to Mac.
We'll go with that.
I agree with John that Macklemore was safe, was the safe pick for the album of the year. All things considered, a white male in a suit is much more of a safe choice when it comes to accepting an award with some level of prestige. I agree that Kendrick Lamar's album is much better than Macklemore's. However, my beef is with something else that I observed in social media. While I can't quite identify with white guilt or discrimination of African Americans, I'm an Asian in his late 20s, I have become a silent observer of the praise that Macklemore has received for the song Same Love. It's true, Same Love is Macklemore's song saying basically same-sex relationships are okay. It's true that with each generation comes more acceptance of same-sex marriage and LGBTA people. However, this comes full circle with the entire safe representation of hip-hop. There are plenty of songs that predate the release of Macklemore's Same Love, most notably Murs' Animal Style. There was some controversy over the male-to-male Kiss the Music video, but it was barely a blip on the radar. The Murs song covered a closeted gay couple, culminating in a murder-suicide. In my opinion, this is simply goes hand-in-hand with the idea that Macklemore is a safer ambassador to hip-hop. I'm glad there is someone else that has pointed this out, especially with larger audiences that you guys have. Thanks for talking about a wide range of topics, from recent vinyl acquisitions to something like this, race-related issues. Keep it up and keep the music coming. Cheers, Gabe. Well, Gabe, thanks for the letter. I don't know if anybody has any thoughts on that. I just thought it was an interesting thing that he pointed out.
I kind of missed where he, other than him being Asian and talking about Macklemore, I kind of missed the whole race-related thing. It seemed to be more of an LGBT issue.
Well, the point he's making is this. I mentioned that in the Grammys, I think the Grammy Association was not colorblind and kind of went for the, quote, safer guy instead of Kendrick Lamar. And my point is, in the past, I think African-Americans have unfairly been discriminated against or demonized when it comes to like award type ceremonies, so that is a racial issue.
Gotcha.
What Gabe is saying is that everyone's like, Macklemore, you're so great because you have a hip hop song saying it's okay to be gay, but he's saying that Murs, who's an African American, who's real big in the Bay Area but not as big outside, he's been around for 15 years. He had that song like 10 years ago and nobody made a big deal out of it.
Ah, gotcha.
So anyway, we got another letter, but I'm going to read this article first because the letter segues into it. It's quite an opinionated letter, and then you guys can react to the letter. But before we of course, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And of course, we have to give much props to Sound Guy Nairman, who runs this. He stitched this together. My main man, Sound Guy Nairman. Thanks very much. Okay, so the first article that we're going to talk about today is Dwayne Pierce has been arrested on felony charges. Let's see. I guess it was this past weekend. Dwayne Pierce was arrested. It turns out that the reason he was arrested was for domestic violence, and he's been charged with it. He's been charged with a felony domestic violence, and he's got a $50,000 bail. And Adam, you're a little bit more hip to this than I am. Even though he's been arrested for domestic violence, they haven't given us like the exact situation of what happened, correct?
Well, there was an article that came out just was it earlier today or just late last night in the LA Times that makes a little bit more reference to it. So it seems like it was a It was an assault against
his wife or girlfriend.
Yeah. Is what he's been accused of. Here we go. Yeah. Okay. Shortly before midnight Friday, Pierce became angry with his girlfriend and assaulted her at their Long Beach home. Neighbors heard the commotion and intervened. According to prosecutors, they said they were able to restrain Pierce until police arrived and arrested him. The victim suffered injuries to her body, and he's in jail in lieu of a $50,000 bond. So that's what we know. Now there hasn't really been any chatter or anything from the Pierce camp on this that I've seen. It's been, you know, all we've really had to go on is the police reports on this so far. So everything has been pretty quiet elsewhere. That's what we know. I mean, Dwayne Pierce hasn't really been in the news all that often these days. He seems to have sort of faded away because not that he's not doing stuff, but we haven't heard much from any of his bands. You know, Disaster Records isn't really a going concern these days. So it, you know, sucks that this is the first we hear of Dwayne Pierce in a while.
Yeah, Mark sent us an email, and he probably has an opinion that's probably different than most people's. He articulates it well, and I'll let you guys react to it. Here's what Mark said. He said, "Hello, Punk News Podcast. Just sending in some listener feedback in regards to the Dwayne Peters arrest story in case you guys discuss it on the next podcast." And we did, Mark. "Is it possible to be more punk than Dwayne Peters? Probably not. As shown in his biography, Who Cares? The Dwayne Peters Story. This man has lived an incredibly difficult life. Before getting into the arrest story, I want to point out why Dwayne Peters is important. First, in regards to his skateboarding, it's impossible to ignore the fact that Dwayne is or was a professional athlete. Anyone who doesn't think that skating empty swimming pools at a pro level qualifies as athletics knows nothing about athleticism." And then he just goes on to talk about how he's a real good skateboarder. Next, this is what Mark says. Mark says, "Second, in regards to his music, one of the best voices, period. Okay, maybe not all the songwriting on his projects is the most stellar, but his bark always bites. Just the right of combination of Southern Cali sun and cheap cigarettes. Despite a back catalog probably too large for his own good, his most prominent band, U.S. Bombs, threw down 3 winners in a row during their prime years on Hellcat Records." And then he goes on to say that Dwayne Peters is a real good singer in his band. So then this is when Mark really gets to the meat of what he's talking about. "So when I read that Dwayne had been arrested and now faces felony charges for domestic violence, I was not surprised. I did not feel like some sort of punk icon let me down. Yes, committing a crime, any crime, whether it's robbing a corner store or hitting your wife, is wrong and shouldn't be excused. The point I'm making is that Dwayne Peters is an amazing pro skateboarder and a great punk rock vocalist. 2 things that should not be grounds for determining whether or not he's a good person. Just because I think he rips on a board and I blast Warbirth from my stereo doesn't mean I automatically think that he's my bro. I actually live a life probably the exact opposite of Dwayne and would never spend time with a person who does the kinds of things that he's done. Will he ever be clean and sober? Probably not. Will he ever stay out of trouble with the police? Probably not. Will I be shocked when the next negative story about Dwayne is posted on Punk News? Probably not. But will we ever see another true skate pioneer and sing the way into punk rock legend status with such a ripping, anything goes, take no prisoner style? Probably not." And so that's Mark's opinion. So it seems that Mark is of the opinion that you should judge the art by itself and not factor in who the artist is in his music. So I'm just curious if you guys agree, with Mark or disagree with Mark.
Well, it's the same argument that everyone's having over Woody Allen right now, given all of the the shit that's been in the news, right? Where
people, Adam, you know, people... excellent point, Adam. 10 Ooh. Points, yeah. Bam.
Plus, yeah, 10. Adam's great. I agree, Adam. Adam, you should get paid for this. No, but I mean, that's exactly the conversation that people are having right now, is that, you know, can you enjoy, you know, his films, given the accusations that have come out? I mean, I guess we should mention that they're just accusations. In the same way, we should mention that, you know, Peters has been arrested, but he has not yet been convicted of any of these things. So, you know, I guess we owe due process its respect here. I think it feels like it's a little bit too soon to be making this kind of pronouncement about, like, the value of Peter's art, given that this, I don't know, this story just came out. Like, the dude is still sitting in a cell right now. So, yeah. You know, I don't think we need to, like, eulogize his career just yet. That said, I mean, I agree totally with the sentiment that, like, I love the U.S. Bombs. The U.S. Bombs were one of those bands when I was really, I've said this before, back in, like, the 90s, I was really, really into Hellcat Records. And, you know, the U.S. Bomb stuff in there, you know, it never got the same amount of, you know, I want to say the kids weren't as into it as they were, of course, Rancid or the Dropkick Murphys or even Tiger Army or anything like that. But, you know, there's a certain time and place where I can really get into a U.S. Bombs record. And, you know, Dwayne Peters being kind of a rough and tumble, mush-mouthed lunatic is, you know, partly a reason why it works for me. You know, that said, depending what comes out of this case, am I still going to, you know, laud the U.S. Bombs? I don't know. They're not totally on my mind in the first place these days. Anyways, it's been a while. So I don't know. I really feel like we should wait a little bit before we, you know, the only start thing discussing I could
think,
that.
The only thing I could think of when I think of this, I know it's not exactly the same thing, but I guess the difference is one was very more public, was the whole, you know, kind of bad scene with Ben Weasel. And back, was it South by Southwest a few years ago when he, like, punched a girl from on stage and then ended up hitting the club owner?
I did not even think of Ben Weasel, but yeah, that's probably a that's a pretty straight analogy, I guess, to what
I mean,
we're
the
talking
only,
about.
The only difference is that we have video evidence of kind of what happened, and there's still debate on that. We don't have video evidence of what happened here. But yeah, I guess it's I guess I'm going to think about it more in the sense that how people reacted to screeching, well, to Ben Weasel's material after that. It's something that whenever people talk about, someone talks about, oh, you know, I love My Brain Hurts or whatever. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you really want to listen to a wife beater. And I mean, not wife beater, I'm sorry. a woman beater. And, you know, from there, you know, some people kind of soured it. And for some people, it's like, ah, you know, you can't take away how great the album is. Even though that person, even though said person may have done shitty things. So that's the only thing.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting because I'm curious to see, I mean, depending on the outcome of this, it'll be interesting to see what the overall punk scene reaction is to it, because Ben Weasel got raked over the coals. I'm not saying that he was wrongly raked over the coals, but he was.
Oh, so, yeah, he was.
So is if let's say the story turns out that, you know what, yeah, Dwayne Peters is guilty of assaulting this person, do we then see the world turn on Dwayne Peters, or
does
it not happen? I mean, let's equate the crimes. Let's say if the crimes are exactly the same, what makes Ben Weasel's worse? And I feel that part of it is that there is a certain degree of the punk scene that was looking at Ben Weasel and his antics and his overall attitude and saying that, oh, you know what, you've done this. Not only is that reprehensible, but, like, fuck you for being such a loudmouth, you know, up to and around this. Like,
it was the culmination of certain events.
Well, right? So he came out and he was like, oh, this is a carnival of Schadenfreude or whatever he said, right?
what a dick.
Right? But exactly, right? So there's that degree where people were looking at, like, what Ben Weasel did and saying, okay, we're all going to mutually agree, Ben Weasel, that was not cool. But you've been a complete cock about everything here. So we're not going to let we're not going to let this slide. We're not going to let you, like, go quietly into the night with your shame here. We're going to make sure that everyone knows that, you know, we're not cool with this. Dwayne Peters is, you know, he has his fans and he's super influential and everything like that. But he, for being such an in-your-face kind of character, he's not really in our faces.
True. My opinion is the punk rock scene is not exactly homogenous. It's sort of homogenous, but it's not exactly homogenous. So different sections of the scene would view domestic violence differently. For example, if Mikey Erg has never hit a woman. No one is suggesting Mikey Erg has ever hit a woman. But if Mikey Erg, like, beat up a woman, it'd be the end of his career. You know, because he's Mikey Erg. His particular fan base is fairly well educated, and they're very interested in feminism and female rights and that kind of a thing. I would say that the U.S. Bomb crowd is not as interested in feminism, and I don't mean that to slight them, but I'm saying if you just read the lyrics, there are much fewer feminism lyrics, or there's none in U.S. Bombs, than there is compared to, say, you know, pick your political du jour band of the day. Like, Brendan Kelly, for example, you know. Well, I don't know if that's a great example, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and so Dwayne Peters' audience would care less about something like this. And on top of that, see, Dwayne Peters is not in the spotlight, so no one really cares, because, like, or a few people care, but the punk rock audience doesn't really care that much, because, well, for a couple of reasons. Dwayne Peters never held himself to the standard as a nice guy. He always said that he's a bad dude, you know. And so, let me preface it: hitting a woman is a really, really bad thing to do, and you should never hit a woman. Right, but I'm saying Dwayne Peters projects himself as a wild, bad dude, so he's just doing what wild, bad dudes do. so people aren't going to be as shocked by this behavior. So they'll crucify him less, or not crucify him, they'll punish him less, even though what he's done, I think, is way worse than what Ben Weasel did. Lastly, and I think this is the most important thing, the question is, can you separate the art from the artist? And my answer is, you can separate the art from the artist, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy the art. For example, in his later career, James Brown hit women. Does that mean you can't listen to James Brown? James Brown is one of the best singers of all time, maybe the best singer of all time. And simply because he was an imperfect person doesn't mean that you shouldn't enjoy his art. You should enjoy his art, understanding where it came from. That being said, that's not like an absolute like line. Like let's say let's say it turned out that some who's a famous dead musician now? Freddie Mercury's a bad example. Roy Orbison is not a child molester, but let's say it turned out that Roy Orbison was a child molester.
Oh my God.
I could never listen to Roy Orbison ever again because a child molester is singing these tunes, right? But I think being a child molester is worse. I'm digging myself in a really deep hole here. Being a child molester is the worst thing in the world. So it's not a bright line, but I'm saying is you can't separate the art from the artist, but just because the artist is an imperfect person doesn't necessarily disqualify the art.
And come back, hold on here.
If you're going to use this example, will you listen to Zeppelin?
Sure, why?
Jimmy Page fucking locked up a 14-year-old for however long at one point. Yeah!
I never heard of that.
Oh, wait. And wait, didn't Steven Tyler from... Well, I know Aerosmith's a bad band to bring up because everybody's like, Aerosmith. But I could have sworn Steven Tyler had a relationship with like a 14-year-old as well. Jerry Lee Lewis as well. Married his 13-year-old.
Well, Jerry Lewis married his 13-year-old cousin. But they stayed married for a while. So I guess it's bad. I don't know. You're right. Jimmy Page...
Hold on. I gotta find this Jimmy Page thing because it's...
I just found it. Jimmy... here's what happened: he kidnapped a 14. This is a legend. I don't think he was ever charged with anything. So kidnapping a 14-year-old girl, having sex with her, and keeping her behind closed doors for years to avoid jail time. Huh?
Yeah. What the fuck? Right?
Yeah, that's some crazy shit.
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm not going to stop listening to Led Zeppelin, even though Jimmy Page did this horrible thing. I mean, because Led Zeppelin's great, so I don't know what to make of it. You know?
Yeah, I know. No one ever talks about that, but it's part of his backstory, and it's one of those things that I guess we awkwardly just ignore. But I think that you had a really good point there, and I think that this is a problem with people in the punk scene in general, and usually young people in the punk scene, is I think that if you're going to be into punk rock, you pretty much have to separate the individual from the music, or you're going to drive yourself completely insane over the years. Because what you're going to start to learn is that musicians in general, and I think punk rock musicians in particular, given the lifestyle that goes around this music, but just given the fact that this is a music that's predicated on being, you know, raw and emotional and not off the cuff and not overly thought out and whatever traits you want to attach to the punk.
Opinions outside the mainstream.
Yeah, right? So you have a bunch of degenerates doing things like this. You are not going to find that... I would argue that most punk personalities, when you really look into them, they're not the kind of people that you want to hero worship. And even the ones that you've decided that you can ascribe most of the hero worshiping to, you'll eventually learn things that don't necessarily make them look like a great person. And this is why I actually think a lot of the punk scene these days, you know, finds it so easy to bag on the Sex Pistols.
Sex Pistols rule. Shut up. Shut up, punk news. Audience,
because I love the Sex Pistols. Don't get me wrong, I love the Sex Pistols, but I think that the fact that like Johnny Rotten is such a like purposefully, I think it's part of his whole act, but is such a difficult person to, you know, to put into that pantheon, it just infuriates people because like he's gonna go and he's gonna go, I'm gonna make like a reality show about bugs and then a butter commercial or something, right? And people just can't put that together. They want to go, no, like you're supposed to be Ian MacKay. You're supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to be one of these pioneers, and the pioneers are supposed to be heroes, and they're supposed to have ideals that we're all living up to. But if you look into it, that's not the case. So you look at guys that you should totally respect the things that they've done and the music that they played. So, you know, totally listen to Sex Pistols records, totally listen to Black Flag records, right? But those people are not necessarily good people. And I think that if you want to be into punk rock, at least, you know, in over the long term, you've got to kind of buy into the fact that you have to separate the people and the music that they play, or else you're going to burn out really quickly, because you're going to all of a sudden learn that you're listening to horrible people put together horrible music. And I think that the more you dig on one of these, you know, on any artist that you're into, even the ones that we find it very easy to make saints out of, you're eventually going to learn that, you know what, these were actual real people. And like most actual real people, they did some actual fucked up things. But I think if you, you know, I don't care if you're the biggest Joe Strummer fan in the world, you can dig into his backstory and find some stuff that's going to kind of make him look like a shithead. And true, that's okay. And I think I think it's okay to keep listening to the music of these shitheads once you learn that they're a shithead, be they, you know, James Brown or Jimmy Page or, you know, Ben Weasel or Dwayne Peters here. It doesn't mean that you necessarily give them a pass for what they're doing, but, you know, you have to accept that the music you listen to isn't necessarily a vote for, you know, a certain lifestyle or ideals. And so many young kids in punk, and I want to say young because those are the ones that seem to be the most outraged about it on punk news, you know, a lot of young people coming into punk, they get into it because they think it's very idealistic and they're part of this movement, but then they have a hard time matching up the fact that, you know, no, you don't have like, you, we don't have good leaders in this movement. Like we're everyone's just sort of fucked up, and some of us can write better songs about it than others.
Bam! Adam, are you insinuating we're jaded?
No, are I don't. I think Adam's suggesting the opposite, that we're optimistic, that we're not jaded.
No, but I'm saying the older individuals that, you come in optimistic, but then you get jaded.
I don't know if it's jaded. I wouldn't go. I mean, jaded, you could probably ascribe it to that, but I want to say there's a bit of wisdom in that where like your eyes are open that, hey, guess what? You know, we don't live in a world with like, you know, gods and heroes in it. We live in a world full of like gross fucked up people, and we're going to have to just accept that.
Adam, I think we should end the podcast right there. That's
a profound point. Drop.
So now that Adam White has enlightened us all in a Socratic fashion, let's talk about Weezer. Weezer's going on a tour, and they're also doing a cruise where you can go on a cruise with Weezer, or maybe that's already passed. I take that back. I thought there was a Weezer cruise. Weezer's going on tour. Does anybody care about seeing Weezer on tour anymore? Or is the Weezer float over? Does anybody care about Weezer at all?
I regret not seeing them back in the day. And I also regret not going to the Blue or Pinkerton shows. That's one of my sincere regrets in life. Some life I've had, right? But that is one regret that I have. But apparently it looks like they're doing a string of shows in smaller venues. So I guess that's the emphasis. But the string of shows is really based in the southeast, and then random one in Rochester, and then Dover, Delaware the next day. It's for the Firefly Music Festival. So I don't know. I guess if you want to hear songs off Hurley and Ratitude and whatever, maybe you can go check it out. But
you said Rochester like it was Mordor.
Well, Rochester's just far from a lot of things.
Not from me. That's all. That said,
not from you.
Not from me.
For a lot of U.S. people, it's far.
I mean, this fits perfectly into the theme of what we were just talking about, because, I mean, Weezer's Blue album was one of the first records that – it was probably the first CD that I ever bought, like, consciously, that wasn't, like, a children's music CD or something like that. So it was, what, like, 1994 or whatever? I totally have a super soft spot for, like, a lot of the Blue album songs and a lot of the stuff on Pinkerton, but, God, have I – mentally separated everything since then in my head from you know what I consider Weezer to be. So I'm okay with listening to those records without having to think about Hurley or anything. I don't even think I've heard Hurley. That was an ignorant thing to say.
Did you just see the cover and say no, just no?
I probably heard a single on the radio and said no, just no. I don't know. I don't know who Weezer plays to these days, whether it's like people like me that have like, you know, mental blocks or people that are like really into Hurley. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's tough to see when they announced what albums that they were playing with that other tour. you knew what you were going to get, and then you were going to get something at the end that you could just walk out on. But this, you don't know what you're getting with this. I mean, you know, if someone goes to these shows, please report back what they did play. That way, I don't know, maybe I'll drive to Rochester or not. I don't know. So, segue.
Philadelphia's Creepoid have released a new music video. Creepoid is one of these Philadelphia bands that are all getting kind of hot together. Creepoid, Kayatana, Waxahachie, well, they're pretty big by now. Well, Restorations, but they've been around for a while. There's a group of Philadelphia bands that are getting kind of popular right now. I checked this video. It's kind of got that, like, 90s alt-rock thing going for it. Alt-rock in, like, the Pixie sense or something like that. That is getting real popular again. So it seems like the early 90s are back. What did you guys think of this video? What do you guys think of this tune? And will Philadelphia break through and become a punk landmark? Like New York, like L.A., like San Francisco. I say no, it won't.
I mean, well, you're from there, so you really have, or you're there, so you have, like, the better judge than the rest of us. There's a lot of stuff coming out of Philly right now that I guess we're all really in love with, so that's, they got that going for them. I'd never heard Creepoid before this. It seems like something that I would otherwise have really enjoyed, but I had just finished watching the Off video before I started watching this one. And it's just, that's bad sequencing. So I kind of wrecked it for me. So I'm going to come back to Creepoid later and listen to them more in a sitting.
You just can't step to Keith Morris. You step to Keith Morris, you're going to lose. You
well, know? If I was listening to it on the radio and they went from that new Off song into this Creepoid song, I'd have been like, this DJ sucks. So this is, yeah, I suck.
Chris, this seems kind of like your kind of jam.
You know, I'm going to, I have a confession. I did not check the video out beforehand. So I don't have an opinion. I haven't formulated an opinion yet. I could have formed an opinion about Philadelphia. I am enjoying the music scene out of Philadelphia recently. Some more than others.
What bands are you really down with from Philadelphia right now? And actually, Chris, I'm going to miss you and your wife. You guys are going to be down in Philadelphia this weekend, but I'm going to be down in Atlantic City at a bachelor party.
That could go in a variety of ways, the bachelor party in Atlantic City, I'll tell you that. But I also could tell you, I am going to be down Saturday to see Majolie. So Majolie is one of the bands I'm currently enjoying at Philadelphia, along with Restorations. Menzinger is now identified with Philadelphia.
Yeah, where are they from? Philadelphia, right?
I believe they were from Scranton originally.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, because I have a friend that went to college and talked about how they were always around Scranton.
Oh, yeah, they are from Scranton. I thought they were from. Because they play here all the time.
But transplanted to Philadelphia.
Yeah, they're from Scranton. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, Menzingers are actually, like, really.
Yes. Yeah. Making moves from Philly. I guess you could even look. A little earlier, like, you know, Kid Dynamite, and I love Paint It Black. So, I mean, you know, I guess in terms of its long-lasting impact, you know, if you compare it to other cities, it doesn't have the, I guess, the historical base that maybe a New York or an L.A. or a D.C. would have. But it's something, you know, something burgeoning, something new. I would think it's associated with the cost of living in Philadelphia as opposed to some other major cities like New York. It's crazy. Especially if we want to live in areas that are trendy. So I guess that's what's contributing to a lot of bands transplanting themselves to Philadelphia now and, you know, contributing to the scene. Still a lot of house shows, too, as well. So that's a good thing that's going on. So I'm enjoying the Philadelphia scene right now. But I'm sorry, Creepoid, I did not check out your stuff yet. I owe you one.
Does Philly have that center of gravity thing that sometimes big cities do where you'll have people from smaller towns around where just inevitably they kind of get sucked into to be part of the music scene there only because that's, you know, there's more venues, there's more shows, there's more population. I mean,
I'm kind of saying no on that, you know, because I was out in the Bay Area a while ago and people definitely moved to Oakland or San Francisco. I don't think a whole lot of people actually move from Scranton to Philadelphia. Are you guys there still?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. People will move from the suburbs to Philadelphia, but Philadelphia basically just, like, becomes less and less dense. So the suburbs are Philadelphia. They're just, like, less jammed together. So I would say Philadelphia has a very weak center of gravity compared to New York, compared to San Francisco, compared to LA.
Well, because that happens here with Toronto, where it, you know, most bands in Ontario that become you know, bands that anyone outside of Ontario hears about probably end up moving into Toronto at some point, because they, you know, they can live in these little enclaves in Toronto where there's lots of artists and lots of shows and lots of, you know, whatever you need to do when you're in a band going on. And, you know, unless you're like one of these Ontario alt country bands or I listen to where they'll leave a small town in Ontario and they'll move to somewhere like Moncton in New Brunswick, which, but that's another story.
That's a trek.
Yeah.
That is a trek. I kind of agree with John that it's mostly people kind of sort of outside Philadelphia or the greater Pennsylvania, New Jersey area, or even some people from, you know, upper New Jersey and the New York metro area kind of have been gravitating more towards there recently. So yes, they are kind of, they do have some pull, but yeah, it's not quite like, I haven't noticed at least as much people moving from very far away or across country just to go to Philadelphia. They may end up in another city first and then kind of end up in Philadelphia once they realize Brooklyn is crazy expensive or LA or other places are crazy expensive. So,
yeah, not to be negative Nancy here, but I think the Philadelphia curse will rear its ugly head once again, in that with a lot of Philadelphia bands, they get kind of popular and they just stagnate and then they end up breaking up and they can't get past that. That happens to so many different Philadelphia punk bands, and I think it's going to happen again. I don't know. I think it's because we're so close to New York and we're close to Washington, D.C., and those both have wildly different music scenes, and Philadelphia is kind of a mishmash. And so we'll see what happens. There are some good bands in Philadelphia, but I mean, honestly, right now, a lot of my favorite bands are in Cali or New York or, well, yeah, Cali or New York. But Philadelphia did have Ink and Dagger, one of the greatest punk rock bands of all time.
Interesting, yeah.
So anyway, speaking of punk rock bands, the house band for Late Night with Seth Meyers will now include Fred Armisen of, I think he's on, what's the name of the show he's on?
Portlandia.
He was also in Trench Mouth and Les Savivants. Did I say that right, Adam? Les Savivants?
Sure. Fav. I would usually say Fav, but whatever.
Also in the band of Les Savivants are Seth Jabrour and Sid Butler, as well as Eli Janney of Girls Against Boys and session drummer Kimberly Thompson. Like I said, I was a little surprised by this because I'm not dissing on Fred Armisen, but I thought he was kind of bigger than this comedy-wise. Like, it just seems like a step down in his career to me, but I could be wrong.
It's an interesting... I don't know if it's down. I don't know if it's sideways.
I mean, Fred Armisen is like really big, right? He's like really, really big, isn't he?
I don't know. I mean, would you say he's a household name? Like, if you mention him to one of your relatives who always seems to confuse people, will they not confuse Fred Armisen? I mean, will they even know who Fred Armisen is?
Well, my mom doesn't even know who David Bowie is.
Really. Oh, God. I mean, just think of, like, other relatives that just, you know, only just randomly will talk about someone random famous with you. I mean, will they know who Fred Armisen is? I mean, that's my basis for, like, a household name. Like, if there's a random family member who I know I can't talk with a lot of things about, and they try and bring up like an awkward subject like, hey, or, you know, my wife's family, her aunt came up to me one time and was like, hey, how about that basketball player, Jeremy Lin? And I'm like, okay, where are we going with this? So I guess I don't think he's quite that where, you know, there's, but you know, if you say Fred Armisen, everybody will know who he is. I think that he does have a relatively strong core of fans, I would say, who kind of like all of his underground stuff. I actually saw him, I think, 2 years ago at Union Hall, Union Pool, whichever. I always confuse those two in Brooklyn. And he kind of did I don't even know what I would call it, but he did a performance where he had a bunch of instruments set up on stage and he would loop the instruments. So he'd start off with one thing and then have that looped, and then he would play another like progression, have that looped. And before you know it, you have five instruments kind of looping but continuing, and then he would focus on one instrument and sing while playing. So he is talented, for sure, and I think that's maybe where he's trying to branch, is more people getting to know him musically as opposed to just like for a sketch comedy. So that's why I think maybe he may be going with that.
I mean, this is both good news and news that doesn't matter at all to me. I mean, I like Fred Armisen. I think Portlandia is very funny. I, you know, he has been responsible for so much, you know, punk stuff getting on to Saturday Night Live, either in jokes, like there's that one skit where they put together like, it was like someone's like reunion or something like that, and they like got together, or it was a wedding and they got together like the old punk band. He had that character that he put together. Was it on Saturday Night Live or on Portlandia, where it was, you know, like some old English punk band guy,
Ian Rubbish in the
Bizarre. Ian Rubbish, right? Yeah. So he's in a lot of punk stuff, and he gets onto those things, and he's definitely like from that scene, and he appreciates that stuff, and that's cool. I'm down with that. Part of me, even though they're, you know, they're both SNL alumni and all that, like I don't quite see the immediate chemistry between him and Myers as like the kind of classic talk show host band leader kind of thing. Like, I don't know. I don't see that. But the other thing is that, and I don't watch late night shows, and I don't know a lot of people that do. And I don't know. And I know that like this whole effort where they're taking, you know, they're taking the Tonight Show and they're really trying to like, you know, drive a lot of these SNL people into it. And like Lorne Michaels is involved now as a producer and all this, where they're trying to really, you know, make it appeal more to younger people. I get that, but I'm not going to turn on a TV at 11:30 or whatever and watch it every night, because that's not how my life works. So, you know, cool, but I'm probably not going to see it unless it starts ending up on YouTube, which is really how I consume most of my late night comedians, is when clips of stuff end up on YouTube, which is, you know, if they set up this show so that it caters to that, which I've got to imagine they will, because that's what Myers are. That's what,
Jimmy Fallon.
Oh shit. That's what, no. So I'm totally messing Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon up in my head. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I see why you're confused, because Jimmy Fallon is now moving to where Jay Leno.
They're all the same person. Okay. But no, you know, my point still stands on here, right? Where, again, I don't entirely see the chemistry there. It doesn't quite work for me. But again, if they've got to really focus this on something that they're generating internet videos out of, or else I'm probably not going to see it, which is like, I feel like I watch a lot of Conan now, but only because, you know, so much of Conan's stuff really is, you know, made to be digestible into little YouTube videos, and the Conan people really aggressively promote them. So,
The only thing I would counter is that I feel like that's what would kind of happen with some of Jimmy Fallon's stuff when he was doing late night. But the problem with the Tonight Show was, for so long you had a host of 30 years in Johnny Carson, and then you had a host for almost 20 in Jay Leno. But Jay Leno's core group is not people our age. Jay Leno's core group is like my dad and the AARP.
But they're all going to die.
But they do. But they get replaced though too. So I mean, if you
we're awesome.
Well, no. My dad's not quite AARP yet. He's getting there. So there's still time. So you know what I mean? That now there's the people who are about to retire that maybe would have enjoyed Jay Leno, and that's what NBC was kind of worried about a few years ago when they lost their initial ratings. But I guess back to Seth Meyers and the band. I think for him. And for a lot of other people didn't stay up. That same group did not stay up for that show anyway, for a late night. So I think for the late night portion, you're definitely going to see it, you know, on YouTube, on the internet, and they're going to kind of do some crazy stuff. I particularly don't care for Seth Meyers too much. So, I mean, that's just me. But I am interested to see, you know, I guess how maybe they bring in Fred Armisen. But I mean, as a house band, there's only so much you do. You kind of play into the joke once in a while. It's like, yeah, you know. Do you agree or whatever? I don't know. I mean, if they try and do something different, maybe I'll check it out. But Seth Meyers, I care less about.
I made that whole discussion thinking Seth Meyers was Jimmy Fallon. So,
segue.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'm excited for the skit where Seth Meyers has Elvis on, you know, and tells him not to gyrate his hips. Or how about when Seth Meyers tells Jim Morrison not to use profane language, and Jim Morrison does. That'll be exciting.
That'd be interesting. I'll check it on YouTube.
So I think we'll play a tune here because we've been talking quite a while. I've got a brand new tune from one of my very favorite bands of all time, Gnarbrutes. Gnarbrutes is a modern punk rock band, but they're so weird and everything they do is just bizarre. Their last, their debut album came after some mixtapes. The mixtapes were like really weird mishmashes. The album was pretty much a punk rock record with some really weird aspects. But their new album is almost like a goth synth album. It's an EP rather, and it's called Dark Moon, and it's out now at their website, which is wearegnarbrutes.com or gnarbrutes.bandcamp.com. And this track is called End of the World.
God knows what's in your heart. God knows what's in your heart. God knows what's in your heart. He's always watching. God knows.
Podcast, we're going to blast through some stories. First story that we're going to talk about is Banner Pilot. Banner Pilot is one of the hottest, newer punk rock bands. They said they've got a new album coming out, and here's what bassist Nate Gangelhoff, good old Nate Gangelhoff, here's what he had to say about the new album. We scrapped what we had, hunkered down over the rest of the winter, spending many hours at our practice space or in front of our respective computers, tinkering around with new ideas. We didn't overthink anything. We just tried idea after idea after idea until something would stick. And the tunes did start to get better. Not only was it rewarding to start to develop songs that didn't sound like complete horse crap, it was also fun. They started to feel like the songs you get excited to play live. And it reminded me of what's so great about being in a band in the first place. I'm really happy with how it turned out. I think that in the end, we stuck to the things that we do well, but varied them a little without messing them up. And I think the attitude of, let's keep trying to make this thing better, paid off. Chris, you're a big fan of this band, right?
Yes, I am. I will say that statement, in other words, saying, expect more of the same that you've been, getting from us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, they pretty much, you know, they're one of those bands that, and, you know, there's in all types of genres, whether it's metal, jazz, whatever, there are just some bands that just stick to what works. And Banner Pilot is that band. So at least from what I've been gathering, they put out, a similar worded statement when they wrote their last album. And then some people, like, you know how some people, when they get on their, when a band gets on their third album and they don't really vary their sound much, they're like, oh man, if I really wanted to listen to this, I could just listen to the first album or the second album. You know what I mean? So I see some of that coming. I'm not disappointed that they keep writing similar material because to me it works. So if it ain't broke, why fix it? Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I think, some other orcore people are as well. You know, just your typical kind of, you know, simple kind of pop punkish but post hardcore-ish stuff. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, I'm excited for another album. I mean, that's pretty much it. Adam, do you listen to them at all?
I had written them off for a number of years because I didn't think that their initial release that everyone was on about was, it didn't interest me all that much. Okay. And I cannot remember what that thing is called.
Is it Past the Poison or Resonation Day?
It was an EP.
Yeah. Past the Poison.
Right. And I get that they were a young band there. And I mean, their influencers were really, really, really clearly on their sleeves at that point. And it was one of those things that I listened to and I was like, yeah, all right. But I could also just listen to the Lawrence Arms and Dillinger Four instead of this. And then I don't need to listen to this. So I ignored them for a while. I really liked Heartbeat Specific. It is not like at the top of my listening pile or anything like that. But I think it was a very solid record. I think this band started to sound like themselves there and, you know, kind of like get above and beyond what, you know, they had been influenced by, which is cool, which is what you want to do. It's how you grow. So, you know, again, though, Banner Pilot's major problem in my life is that they are so hard for me to remember that they're doing stuff. So yeah. We'll totally give this one a listen. But up until we posted this story, I had completely forgotten that they existed. And someone had written the podcast a while ago and yelled at us for ignoring Banner Pilot.
Right,
and
right.
It's going to happen again.
I'll be here to make sure that doesn't happen as one of the Banner Pilot fans.
So just to assuage our angry people who are writing emails to podcast@punknews.org right now, we're totally cool with Banner Pilot. We're excited for this. I'm sorry that I forgot about them.
More good Midwestern influence music. That's it. Music to drink to. Music for cold weather. That's what Banner Pilot is. So, no, I'm excited.
Well, speaking of bands that didn't exist and now sort of do, is Spraynard is putting out a rarities collection. And not only are they putting out a rarities collection, they're doing at least one show at the Philadelphia First Unitarian Church on March 24, 2013. So pretty soon, actually. No, May 24, so a while from now. Here's what the group said. We're not sure what this means for us as a band, but we're excited to play this show and have a really fun night with a lot of good people. So people are really shocked by this because I kind of thought that like the rumor was that everybody hated each other in this band. Wasn't that the rumor?
I don't know either. You ask the people who don't know. I will say this. I have a quick old man rant. I hate when did they break up?
I hate those new sneakers with pumps. what are kids up to these days putting air in their sneakers? What your sneaker doesn't have enough air in it already? You have to put air in your sneaker? Back in my day, you had to staple your shoes on.
What's up with plows? Why can't we just, you know, have horse and buggies pull shovels? I don't know, whatever. No, but seriously, this is a band I didn't honestly really listen to, but didn't they just break up 5 minutes ago? Like, I could have sworn they just broke up.
I think it was like a year ago or something. Let's look it up now before we get.
I mean, while you're looking that up, I will continue in the sense that I am getting kind of irritated at this. I mean, I'm assuming it's not a new phenomenon, but maybe I'm just becoming more aware of it. Bands that have like this big publicized breakup, or is our last shows, or X, Y, and Z, and then within a relatively short period of time, kind of get back together. Oh, you know, yeah, reunion. And I mean, within the span of a calendar year, it's not really a breakup and reunion. Why announce anything? You know, I mean, I don't know. I guess to stay relevant, but when there are a few other bands that I like that I don't feel like naming right now that have broken up and didn't stay broken up for very long. And it's like, well, what was the point of announcing and making a big deal about everything? You know, who
sell
cares?
Out cash. You talk about the cash, Chris.
I mean, I don't care if they want to get back together, but why announce a breakup? Like, why announce a what's supposed to be a finality? As we know, nothing is ever really final except for a few bands.
Well, I mean, the reason is this: it's because when bands break up, at that moment, they really do feel like they're going to be broken up forever, either because they hate each other or just because they're tired. I mean, all people, but particularly artists, when they feel a certain way, they really feel that way, so they don't sit down and think about whether they'll feel that way a year from now.
But doesn't it feel more like a new generation's short attention span?
Yeah, that, in a way.
That now it's just, you know, oh, okay, they broke up, and it could have been like 3 weeks ago. It's like, oh my God, I totally forgot about them. Welcome back. But it's like, no, you didn't really go away yet.
But that's also, though, because Chris, Adam, and I, we all come from the era when bands lasted forever. Like, from like the 80s through like 2000, bands would last 20 or 25 years. If you remember, the Damned broke up like four times between their first and second album. The Bad Brains broke up five times before their first and second album. So bands used to break up all the time. But in our era, when the cash was really good, bands would stay together like for a long time. And now bands break up like all the time. You were at a Spraynard broke up like 18 months ago. And here's what I was right, they did hate each other. When they broke up 18 months ago, here's what they said: as much as it hurts to say, it can't wait any longer. Spraynard is no longer a band. We started this band because all three of us were the best of friends. Lately, this has not been the case. All three of us are moving in much different directions, and being in a full-time touring band just isn't making sense anymore.
To me, it's just like, you know, I don't know. Why not? I don't know. Hiatus, nothing. You know, we're taking a break. I don't know anything. Well, this is it. We're done. 2 months later. Hey, you know, we had a drink and we decided, hey, why not start the band up? You know, nostalgia, bring back the memories of 2013.
Fun fact, the band Martin, which is actually kind of popular in Philadelphia right now, that band's ex-Spraynard. That's one of the up-and-coming Philadelphia bands, is Martin.
Okay.
I totally get the criticism that bands break up and get back together too quickly these days. But I want to put myself in the shoes of, like, if one of my favorite bands broke up and I was super bummed about it, and then, I don't care, 20 days later, they were like, we're getting back together, I would be really excited. So I can see why, you know, I can't totally write that off. I have to say, this article has one of the most, just the glorious, most gloriously mean comments that I've seen on Punk News in a while under it.
That's saying something.
Yeah. Care to share? You kind of brought it up.
This is from Ape Man on the Moon. So he said, and this is after two or three comments that people had left that were fairly dismissive, but not overly antagonistic about Spraynard. So he said, why am I not surprised that the miserable fucks of Punk News are pissing on the ideas of a band that makes feel-good, positive music getting back together? The only reason why most of you sad, lonely people haven't killed yourself yet is because you can't unwrap your lips from that beer bottle long enough to wrap it around a gun instead. Like, holy shit, dude!
I actually agree with that statement.
Brainerd probably saved that guy's life or something.
They talked him off the ledge.
Whoa. Somebody... no, I mean, like literally, like jumped and like pushed him out of a way of a van that was speeding around a corner or something. And he's like eternally in their debt and must defend their honor on Punk News against like anonymous dicks on the internet. Like, holy shit.
And just for full disclosure, I wasn't pissing on Spraynard. I mean, I don't love them. I don't dislike them. They're cool. It's just, I was just more about the short attention span of the general breaking up, getting back together. It's not just limited to Spraynard.
Did you hear that? Ape Man on the Moon, Chris Barnett. The only reason he's talking shit on Spraynard is because he can't unwrap his lips from his beer bottle and put his lips around a gun instead.
I don't have any beer in my house, so I couldn't quite unwrap my lips from that. I guess the pint glass of water I may have. I don't know. You know.
Well,
yikes.
Well, yeah. Let us dig ourselves out of this void of blackness, and we will reach out to Mastodon, a feel-good heavy metal act, an upbeat heavy metal act. Mastodon's going on tour with Gojira, who actually I just saw open for Slayer, and I hate to say it, Gojira blew Slayer off the stage. They really did. Mastodon's going on tour with Gojira and Verlattack. And they will start on April 28th and run through almost May. They're hitting up pretty much all the big cities across the globe. I mean, across the states, that is. No Canada, though. They'll be hitting up Electric Factory in Philadelphia. Where else? Most of the big venues. You name the big venues. They're 930 Club, Terminal 5. No San Francisco. Oh, Oakland, though. Fox Theater in Oakland. Are you guys into Mastodon or Gojira at all?
Is it actually pronounced Gojira?
It's French. Gojira? Oh, well, actually, the word is Japanese, isn't it? But they're a French
band. Yeah, it wasn't like the Japanese name for Godzilla, right? But I always thought it was Gojira.
Maybe. It could be. I don't know. I saw.
I mean, I've never heard it spoken. Most words that I've never heard spoken.
Gojira! I saw whoever they are open for Slayer. And they're actually, a lot of heavy metal. I'm a big heavy metal fan, but... Like, whenever bands have, like, the same vocals, like, it gets so boring. But this band really caused me to perk my ears up when I saw them. Their music is, like, really complex and heavy, kind of like Neurosis. But, they're a really unique band because, like, all their songs are about, like, environmentalism and, like, saving the planet and stuff. And their songs are crazy. There's one song called, like, The Flying Whale or something. And it's about how he goes on an astral dream and a flying whale comes to him in space and tells him to save the planet or something. So they're a pretty interesting heavy metal band, I gotta say.
I'm totally ignorant to them, but I will check that out.
Well, so was I. I mean, my friend Matt is really into them, but before I saw them open for Slayer, I think I had heard the name, but I never knew anything about them. But, I mean, if you like Neurosis, well, I don't know if that's the best example, like pretty heavy metal, but not extreme metal, you'll probably like Gojira. They're like half thrash, half drone, half three halves, half... modern technical metal, so they're pretty
150%.
Yeah, they're 150%. And you know, Mastodon's cool. They're, you know, just a high energy, almost more classic rock than metal, and they just blast out the tunes.
So I feel that we've completely ignored it, but we should probably make mention that yes, Chris Moran was on this show, but then the Icepocalypse or whatever you guys are calling it claimed him very early on. That's why he hasn't said anything.
Adam, we're not going to tell them that he unwrapped his mouth from around the bottle of beer.
No. I guess it wrapped it around like an icicle or something, right? So
let's wrap up this podcast with, I know we talk about this band every time I'm on, and I really didn't want to talk about them this week, but I had to because this video is so awesome. Off released their first track. It's called Off, featuring Keith Morris of Black Flag, of course. They released their first track called Void You Out, and they just released the video for it. The track's been out for about a week or two. Then they've got a video called Void You Out, and man, this video is awesome! Awesome. Adam, do you think most people got the references in the movie, in the video?
I'm sure I didn't get half the references in the video.
Well,
but
there's really only like one big reference. The video itself references another video.
Oh, shit. Well, then I probably didn't either.
Oh, it's the decline of Western civilization. It's like a parody of the decline of Western civilization. Keith Morris even redoes his famous speech from that movie.
The BYO related early thing there. I don't know if I've actually ever seen that. It's totally going to make me sound horrible, but I don't know if I have. But
it's pretty good. The soundtrack is awesome.
The soundtrack is amazing. That film itself is fairly legendary. I don't know if I've ever seen it myself, but okay, that makes total sense now, given the Off video. All right, people probably didn't get that.
I just realized that there's like a super reference in it. Is Keith Morris was good friends with Darby Crash, and he claimed that Darby Crash saved his life. And when Keith Morris is making food, that's what Darby Crash did in the decline, which is pretty cool.
That's a spoiler alert.
But anyway, do you guys like this song? I love Off. I think the third album is going to be the best. I thought the video was hilarious. I think it's going to be awesome.
I'm a big fan of the song. I'm a big fan of Off. I'm a big fan of stuff that is short and then ends when I want it to end. Like, I like that they haven't, you know, I get that was my worry, was that they were going to get a little bit too serious about this, and then they were going to take these songs that were, like, you know, short and amazing on their own and go, hey, now it's time for, like, an extended bridge. So, you know, when this song, there was a point in this song where, like, you know, they got to the second chorus, and mentally in my head I was saying, if this is the Off I love, this song will end right now. And then it did. And I was like, haha, good. And I mean, it was just because it was a 5-minute video with all the extra filler around it. So I'm like, oh man, I hope that this isn't like song for the next 2 minutes, because that would bum me out. But no, it was, we're going to play this tiny little song that's awesome. And that's what I like about Off.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for listening to the punk.
The Snowpocalypse is getting to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough. I think we should wrap the podcast up. Off rules. I got it. Adam, do you have a track? Because I got a track if you don't have a track.
I don't have a track. What do you got?
Let's play something by No Bunny. I just saw No Bunny, I guess, last weekend. And honestly, I've seen No Bunny 4 times. And the first 3 times I saw him, he was good, but it was disappointing because I saw him on his local turf. And so, like, they would spend a lot of time just, like, dicking around between the songs. So, like, even if it was, like, a 40-minute show, you'd only get, like, 12 minutes of music. And so the music itself was awesome, but there's just so much screwing around. But I just saw him on tour. Man, No Bunny blows the house down. No Bunny rules. Like, I saw them live. They were really, really good live. So let's play a track off No Bunny's brand. Well, it's not a brand new album, but it's a pretty new album. The album is called Songs from the Ear Mirror. It's out on Garner Records. And this is a track called Bye Bye Roxy off the Garner Records release, Songs from the Ear Mirror.
The first words that came to my mind, burn it all down and leave nothing behind. Run away, don't worry about tomorrow. And you'll only need what you find, and everything else is a waste of your time. So keep on moving, otherwise you're dying. I got worries on my mind, and I'm always getting stop crying. Ooh. But these are just thoughts in your head, and soon like you they'll be gone and dead. Don't think about it too much, that should kill you. The rules are there for you to break. The rights you have are the ones you take. And I think I'll take a break. Woo-hoo.
Punk News Podcast. Adam, I gotta say, I think you win the podcast prize for your fabulous speech at the beginning of today's podcast. How does it feel to win the gold on the Punk News Podcast?
Well, I mean, I have to accomplish something in my life, and if this is going to be it, then, you know, that's a good full life.
And Chris Barrett, you won silver. I know you're expected to win the gold. I know your country usually gets the gold on this cat in this competition. How does it feel to get silver? Is it bittersweet, or are you just happy to compete?
This is Ashley Wagner shaking head, looking to the side, saying bullshit. But I will bite my medal.
And of course, as always, I got the bronze. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. This is Jonathan Tilley. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next week.